Strat stays out of striking distance as the stallion rears, bugling, and charges the mare, lifting even Tempest briefly off the ground. Tempest's chest wound flames, threatening to rip apart. Horses blare their lust and scream to the skies. Reproduction will not be denied. Nature has a surer plan than mortals can devise. Grabbing up his robes, Torchholder backs along the fence to safety, away from plunging horses, and still makes no reply. Talk is useless anyway, over the din of horses vowing momentary fealty to each other. Nico has the mare's upper lip twisted in a rope loop at one end of a wooden shaft. Strat holds her bandage-wrapped tail to the side as Tempest brings the stallion down on all fours and aims him at the mare's rump. The mare wails and stamps, and the stallion trumpets as two huge horses get ready to make another. Then nature stalls, and ardor cools. Torchholder, intrigued, edges forward, robes dragging in the dust. Now, finally, comes a blessing from the waving hands and wriggling fingers of the sacred band's new patron, Vashanka's priest in sanctuary. Crit, darting in close, winds a rope around the mare's left front ankle, pulling her forefoot off the ground and out to one side.
"Now try it!"
Despite the loops wound tight about her upper lip and her suspended foreleg, the mare tries to kick, jerking the ankle rope, and nearly goes to her knees.
"Watch out!"
Strat warns, pulling her tail around her hip.
"Here we go!"
Man staggering backward. As dangerous as any battle is this moment when emboldened mare meets screaming stallion for the purpose of begetting, and woe to any who try to get in between. In a rush, the stallion rears up and mounts her, teeth in her neck, front legs along her withers, pushing his horsehood desperately into her flank. No foal can result from missing the target. Tempest shoves the stallion over hard with his shoulder, grabbing the organ and guiding it. Now mating is achieved, with requisite grunts and squeals called out to the equine gods. The priest starts forward. Tempest warns him back. The danger is not past. The stallion's tail flags and jerks while the mare leans back against him. Then he's finished, nearly collapsing on her, head drooping along her neck. Everyone relaxes. He won't bite her, nor kill those men around him. She won't bite him now, or anybody else.
"We're done,"
Tempest confirms. The big troth slides off Nico's mare. Stratton drops her tail and takes the stallion's lead shank from Tempest. Crit frees the mare's leg and grabs hold of her head. Nico untwists the loop on her lip. Quiet descends as two horses, passion spent, part with only a few knickers exchanged between them. The deed is done, the result yet to come, with none hurt, not man or horse. With horses or men, some things take time, and with or without some wizard-blooded priest, this mating is truly blessed. Tempest knows the signs. The storm god, withholding so much else right now, is pleased with this. Clouds collect above, the sun goes away, the day swiftly cools, and in Tempest's head the god shifts and rumbles, breathing deeply, watching all as he has not done since Chironea. Then the god withdraws. For Tempest, time resumes its normal pace. Nico, beside him, Tempest walks over to the priest and says,
"So, Torchholder, how can we help you today?"
"Help me keep the peace with that sacred band of yours as we agreed. What are you going to do about this Shamshi boy of yours? What about this dead girl from Aphrodisia House?"
said Torchholder darkly.
"You're responsible to investigate this death."
"As you wish. Better us than you. Perhaps the gods aren't so angry today." Tempest called out to his stepsons, leading the horses away. "Crit, Stratton, come right back. We're going into town to deal with this dead whore. And send Corus to me, now.
Tempest turned back to the priest.
Corus is really why you're here, isn't it, Torch, to meet the son of Ashanka, and why you've hired the band and put the godchild under your command. Let's hope you're not disappointed.
I won't be, said the priest.
Eminence, Corus is asking about his mother, the temple dancer, Salala, Nico said to Torch. Tempest doesn't remember her well. Nico's astute grin came and went. Do you still have her?
She's dead.
Let me guess, Tempest said. She died yesterday? The day before?
Tempest wouldn't put it past this priest to have killed Corus's mother as soon as he learned the boy was alive and well and in sanctuary. For control of Giscarus, possibly the future avatar of a long-missing god, Molin Torchholder would pull no punches, take no chances, and spare no expense. The youth's heritage had ensured that Torchholder would hire the band. Giscarus was an actual son of Vashanka, the pillager, the most ravenous and destructive of all storm gods. There was too much power in this youthful stepson for the priest to resist. No competition for Corus's allegiance, not even from his mother, could be tolerated by a man like Torch.
Or will his mother die before morning, or by tomorrow latest?
Commander, you mistake me, protested the priest.
Nico scoffed, crossing his arms.
I doubt it, Tempest said.
My heart is pained that you think so ill of me, Torch rejoined. We have a temple to Vashanka in the city, and, as you well know, a chapel in the palace. He should see them. Giscarus is more than welcome in his father's homes.
Just remember, Torch, this young Corus is one of ours. Nico's trainee, a member of the sacred band of stepsons, will not let you corrupt him.
Then boyish Giscarus, barefoot, red hair wet and combed back, sporting a few healing wounds from Chironea and wearing only a chiton and a short sword on his belt, came jogging across the training field straight to Tempest.
Commander, Stratton said come to you.
Acknowledging only Nico with a nod, looking neither to the left nor the right, and displaying no curiosity about the priest, the young stepson awaited orders.
Giscarus, this is Molin Torchholder, priest of the god Vashanka in sanctuary, and our patron. He knows of your mother.
Tempest barely remembered Salala, Corus's mother, from a ritual procreation here long ago.
We'll leave you two to talk a while. Not long, Corus. We're riding into town today, and when we go, you're with us.
The look on Torch's face was worthy of a starving jackal faced with a young and tender goat. The whole band leadership wants to be with Tempest. They'd nearly lost him. They still might. He's not himself yet, and everybody knows it. Nico knows it all too well. Like an honor guard, they go with him everywhere. The Riddler tells Nico that he thinks the fates may be angry, the Theban goddess incensed. Chironea. Everything that feels so wrong went wrong there, and just won't mend. Nico has never felt so close to doom. Creaking leather, clank of iron, muffled hoofbeats on the muddy roads, Tempest and his officers coming into sanctuary under a cloudy sky. All the best of the stepsons ride south across the Whitefold Bridge and into the Red Lantern's district to find out why a whore has died.
Just be well, Tempest, so all of us can breathe again. Don't take risks here that can be avoided, No death worth dying awaits any man in sanctuary where even gods can be lost.
The storm god tells Nico's partner what he needs to know. Nico never hears Enlil. And his commander, darkly brooding with his wound so slowly healing, leading that breeding stallion with the god's might in him a more than human effort, had been bent on reassuring every fighter that all was well and their commander's strength returning. Tempest wouldn't have bothered if it were the truth. Coming down the street of Red Lantern, still littered with debris from the last storm, Tempest sidles his big trouse close to Nico's colt. The colt, crowded, squeals.
"Why didn't you tell me about Sham, Nico?"
"I tried," he reminded the Riddler as the big horse jostles his colt again. No one else can hear them as they file along two by two. Crit rides with Strat, Karen with Lysis, and Sink with Chorus behind them. "But you were always busy, and what could I say? That he's a dark soul? I had nothing solid then, just my mot, just my gut feelings. But now I doubt he'll make a stepson. I'm sure still he's not the pairing kind. Ares guileless and disciplined, Shamshi is cunning and disruptive. I disagree with Crit that Ari and Sham could make a match."
"There, it's said. Shamshi will do Ari harm if we force it." "Anything more, Nico?"
The Tros horse sighed past until Tempest's right knee brushed Nico's left and the colt squealed once more, offended, then quieted under Nico's urging, learning its lesson about keeping calm in close quarters. Out came all the problems Nico was trying not to load onto the Riddler.
"More?
Ari needs a friend, a partner. Sham's not that kind."
"Shamshi isn't anyone's friend."
"And Sham was too rough with that whore, for no reason." "We all heard it. It might have been theater from the whore, but it wasn't. He didn't kill her there and then, but he could have, and he might have caused her death later."
"Just heal, Tempest."
"The partnering can wait. We'll find out what happened to this woman, or at least observe the forms. Crit has my orders. We will discipline our own, if it comes to that. And the priest will let us. Torch doesn't really care about the dead whore. He wants Giscaris allegiance."
Subject closed. Nico knew better than to try reopening it. But they were still close enough to talk unheard. Coming past Phoebe's Inn, where Shamshi's predilections would have been well served. The Tros shied into Nico's black, and then other horses balked. Dead snake in the road, 5 feet long, white-bellied and chewed halfway through.
"Riddler, about the gods being angry, I've been feeling it. Is that why you brought these Thebans into town with us?"
"We need to fix it," said Tempest, and that was all.
At Aphrodisia House, Tempest strode in with Nico, Strat, and Crit close behind. Madame Myrta said,
"She took a bath and went out walking. That's all I know."
The madam's eyes were frightened.
"Commander, you and your stepsons are always welcome here. This fuss is not our doing. I saw the body. There's no sign of murder on her, but sometimes girls just die."
They thanked the whoremistress and got out of there to follow Myrtis's directions to where the dead harlot was found and then to examine the body for themselves. Coming down the steps, Crit caught Nico by the arm.
"Stealth, will you track the dead girl?"
"Surely. But go slow then, or go ahead and I'll catch up."
Nico signaled toward the Thebans and Chorus.
"Caution. Stay back."
The Theban Karen, quick-eyed, understood and nodded, surveying all from atop a sorrel horse, Lysis astride a brown gelding close beside. Now Nico must ignore everything to track a dead girl's wraith in the whorehold. His horse's cadence lulls him. "Relax. Breathe deep." But calm eludes him in broad daylight on a sanctuary street.
It might be too late to find the fading heat track of this girl when so many others have been up and down these streets today. But he'd seen the girl just last night at Aphrodisia House when she was alive. His breathing steadied. The colt he rode walked on. The sun high above came out and beat down warm, forgiving, proof of life. Harness jingled, a breeze caught up the sound and sent it spinning into another place, into a dark night ending, where a girl's pain-racked track could still be found. Her heat track was red and amber, fuzzy like wool wound round a seeress's hands, heading off toward the white foal's edge. He need the horse to follow between alleys across a back lot, forgetful of the group. He reached the river's banks, within sight of the white foal bridge. The luminous heat track did not cross the bridge. It stopped in a ditch beside the road, and there it died, winking out like a doused flame. Nico stopped his horse. He wasn't going any farther. The girl died here. He saw no image, no crumpled form, no struggle or attacker, just that dousing of the red and amber light. He wasn't going to seek his rest place, his spirit's place of peace, to invite a dead girl's soul there and ask it questions. In former times, when he was better balanced, he might have caught up with a soul so newly dead. But not today, not unless the Riddler ordered, not unless there wasn't any other way. He sat his horse quietly until the rest arrived. They'd taken a longer route. The dead girl had been accustomed to this part of town, knew all the shortcuts. "Here," he said, shaking off the trance. "She died right here." Tempest got off his horse, surveyed the ground. He bent down, took mud in his fist, and nodded. Opening his hand, the Riddler looked at the mud as if it told a tale, wiped his hand on his thigh and mounted up, staring across the bridge, through slitted eyes. Critias and Stratton sat unmoving on their horses, Thebans and Chorus close behind. Crit's face was stony. Strat's ghost horse reared up on both hind feet, settled, reared again, came down, but jigged in place. Now Nico recognized this place, across that bridge, down that cart track on the other side, two witches once made their homes. Across the White Foal Bridge was the place Stratton had promised Critias he would never go again, where a necromant had kept an odd little house with a low iron fence. Strat had sent Sink and Gale down here to see if the necromant's house was still standing, but they couldn't find it. The ghost horse gave an ear-splitting whinny. It wanted to go home. Karen and his son looked from stepson to stepson, not knowing why battle was in the faces and the bodies of the sanctuary veterans. "Strat," Nico said. "I'm sorry. I didn't realize where we were." Strat said,
"No fault of yours, Nico. No fault of anyone's."
His face was stiff with self-control. Necromants kill without leaving a sign of violence, the marks Sham had made on the harlot from Aphrodisia House, according to the whoremistress Myrtis, were minimal, unlikely to be fatal, barely there. Oh, gods, not again. Every hair stood up on Nico's arms. Tempest and he had killed a witch, for certain, years ago. But the necromant, Ashad, might still be prowling. She'd nearly destroyed Stratton once. Of all things wrong in Sanctuary, Nico knew this witch was what Critias feared the most. Maybe it's not the witch. Maybe the necromant had nothing to do with this. Maybe it was Death Touch and Shamshi after all. An elbow in the sternum, a finger jabbing at your heart, and inescapable death is delayed hours, even a day. Which is worse? A necromant, or a renegade Bandaran initiate with wizard blood? Take your pick. Crit, who loved his partner too much, said protectively,
"Now we know what happened to that girl from Aphrodisia House."
Crit's voice was bitter, his sigh deep and quavery.
Stepsons had cleaned up countless corpses from witches' work on this side of town a decade past.
"So we know how our harlot died and where, and when we see the body we'll know at whose hands. Let's go."
A necromant was an easy explanation, and Crit's preferred one, if perhaps not the right one. Tempest looked from Crit to Strat to Nico and voiced what everyone was thinking.
"So at least one of those witches may still live down here."
The Riddler wanted to protect Sham from palace interference to avoid a scandal involving the band to deal with this matter internally. And by agreement, chasing witches and warlocks for the palace was outside the band's area of responsibility. The Thebans were casting glances every which way, trying to spy a witch, a specter, a supernatural threat. But they wouldn't. Not in daylight. If they found this threat, it would have found them, and they couldn't win against it with their swords. Tempest ordered everyone out of there. They rode bunched up east to the old Rankin garrison of Cyclopean stone and cedar where Walgren had taken the body. Once there, the Thebans waited outside with the horses, and everyone else, including Chorus, went inside and down stone stairs to the cellar to take a look. The corpse's wicker litter was surrounded with herbs to mask the smell, laid on a heavy wooden table and covered with a gray linen shroud.
"It's just one body, just one girl. But it's an offense against the gods, murder without reason, bereft of honor or even sense. Riddler, can't you feel the darkness in that Shamshi?"
Most likely, Death Touch, not any witch, had killed this girl. Had there ever before been a renegade Bandaran initiate, a travesty sprung from the Misty Isles? If Sham is one now, Nico has had a hand in making him. Long ago, Nico had taken Shamshi to Bandera to save him from execution alongside his adulterous mother in Migdon. It was a small mercy then, perhaps a mercy gone bad here and now. Strat held up the shroud a long time before folding it back. Crit turned the body and felt it all over, pushing at its loins, its belly, looking for signs of wounds from rape that might have killed. Tempest kept watch over his stepsons with havoc in his eyes. Walgren drifted in, unspeaking, and leaned against the dank wall under a high window in this candlelit chamber where bodies were kept until they could be claimed or burned or buried. Chorus blanched, confronted with the ashen-cold body of a young girl he'd so recently met.
"That's her," said the son of the storm god. "Sham's chosen girl, Dinia."
"Nico?" Stratton asked.
Nico didn't need to examine the corpse, but he was expected to do it. Nothing here would change his mind. Death Touch, not witchery, made this kill. He could nearly smell it, he could nearly see it like after-images from lightning strikes, but he couldn't prove it. Strat's blue eyes met his and held. They shared a special bond, the two witch-touched stepsons. Nico ran his hands over the cold hoar amid the herbs and linen lying on her litter caked with mud and grit.
"There's no mortal wound."
He rolled her body to and fro to be sure. "It can happen this way with the necromant." "Don't contradict the preferred version of events. It's plausible. It's what Crit wants, what the Riddler wants. Someone from outside to take the blame." If Chorus's eyes got any bigger, they would pop from his head. Ordinary life was just as dangerous as the battlefield, Chorus was learning today. Stratton frowned at Nico, then looked away. Strat had loved the witch. He might love her still. And the moment feels so wrong to Nico that his head spins. His commander is changing destinies today. He knows what Strat wants. He knows what Crit and his commander want. He knows what his Mott tells him. and none of these agree.
Tempest fixes him with that hellish stare and repeats what Nico said.
It can happen this way with the necromant.
And waits. No one says a word. Then his commander asks him.
But did it, Nico?
Nico can only say. It could be the witch, or not. I can't say for certain. Tempest claps Stratton on the back.
Stratton, Crit, you know the witch's signature. Have your say. Write the words for the palace. Walgren.
Tempest turns to the garrison captain who hasn't said a word.
A witch is at play here. Nothing new in that. Our stepson is not at fault. Torchholder says there's no sorcery abroad. Perhaps he forgot about necromancy.
He turns on his heel.
I have enough without a witch to chase. Tell Torch we're done with this. Our agreement is specific. The sacred band won't fight witches or warlocks or wizards this season. You tolerate this necromant in your midst. Live with it or die with it, but don't bring it to my door. Understood?
That tone from the Riddler of iron being whetted or a doom being sealed, everyone understands. Walgren backs away and out the door, palms up before him, promising an end to the matter. Outside in the muggy air, Tempest strode up to Charon the Theban and said,
This goddess of yours, Harmony, we need to deal with her. Now, can you help us?
Now? Perhaps, said Charon, we can find a way. Our deities are not like yours. Except on the battlefield. His golden son Lysis looked from Tempest to his father and back. If your goddess is unhappy here, maybe we can help get her home where she belongs. The Riddler's voice may have chilled the Thebans, but it gladdened Nico's heart. It was a voice like gravel sliding downhill. Like bones being crushed for marrow or chariot wheels turning or your destiny about to take command. Tempest as he always has been and is again at last. Then they all rode full tilt, back toward the sacred band barracks and a clatter of hooves and a flurry of manes and tails and mantles through streets where people scrambled out of their path and dove for cover. Who hadn't heard so many war horses come running in a long, long time. End of chapter 9. Chapter 10. Ancient Remedy.
Slaughter the ox. Decapitate it. Gut it. Bone it. Don't skin it. And leave the carcass beside Enlil's altar. Then clean up and come to the old amphitheater before first watch, all of you. No weapons, for special training. And don't make a mess out at the altar.
Stratton had told the three youngest stepsons hours ago before midday, and now the day was nearly done. The sacred band leadership had decided on a remedy for the problems surrounding Shamshi. Everyone knew what to do. Stratton had interrogated Sham to make sure, not touching him, just talking with him. Nico had asked Strat to be gentle, so Strat was as gentle as he could be. It had been a long time since someone had asked him to be gentle, searching for the truth. A young fighter's eyes, pupils wide, innocent and brave, can haunt your dreams, not like Sham's, which were guarded cunning. Shamshi was outwardly repentant about the rape, worried. The trainee was nearly 20, Strat estimated. Old enough to fight, to kill, and to be treated as a man. His face was pinched full of care. He knew the sacred band had protected him from palace interference and garrison internment. He might have preferred those to what was to come if he'd had a choice. Strat had questioned Shamshi painstakingly for Nico, for himself, and for Critias. so that there would be no doubt, because the witch, Ishad, might be involved.
"Tell me the witch isn't in this,"
Crit had whispered to Stratton outside the interrogation cell they'd made out of Critias's office.
"The witch isn't in this,"
Strat had replied, remembering when they'd exchanged these exact words before, years ago. Stratton could honestly say that the necromant had had no hand in this whore's death so far as he could tell. He wasn't saying it to protect the witch. He was saying it because he believed it to be true. And Crit knew it. Truth has its own ring, and those who live by it and die by it know the sound of it when they hear it. And this truth had convinced the senior staff that something must be done about the wizard boy. Truth has a way of doing that. Now the moon was out early, full and huge while the sky still blazed blue and pink and gold. Lit torches were stuck in the ground in a circle, throwing long distorted shadows. In that circle waited Tempest and Nico, Crit and Sink. Sink had a length of hemp rope coiled over his shoulder. Strat took his place among them. Their circle spread out more. The sacred band was gathering, curious stepsons and Thebans drifting in with the lengthening shadows of the waning day. He saw craggy Charon and his son Lysis sit beside some others on the stones ringing the amphitheater. Some stood by in groups of two or three, special training. Crickets made more noise than the fighters loitering here, wondering what was coming. Tempest has gotten out his leopard skin mantle, his boar's tooth helmet, and his shark skin hilted sword for this. His bow, mortised with a golden grip, lies close to the helmet beside him on the ground. When Tempest wore that panoply, slaughter, or at least vengeance, was on the docket of the god. Nico had his dream-forged cuirass, all his spooky panoply of weapons given him by the regent of the seventh sphere. Critias, Sink, and Strat, too, are wearing their ceremonial best. Stratton catches Nico's hazel eyes, flat and cold, focused somewhere miles away. All three trainees are young secular initiates from the Misty Isles. Only Nico knows what that really can mean to this enterprise. Not much. The innocent have nothing to fear with Tempest and Critias, Nico and Sink here, Strat thinks, and Stratton himself is not an inconsequential force today. All to teach one young man a difficult lesson. Oh, gods, how did this get so far? How has it come to this? The moon was high above the altar on the hill when the three youths arrived, as ordered, weaponless and scrupulously clean in chitons, linen, loin guards, and sandals. They peered around, eyes glittering at the unexpected audience of sacred banders, some so recently saved, some veteran fighters, and at those within the circle of torches. Nearly the whole sacred band is ranged around them, hushed and expectant. Nico leaves the circle, moving by Strat so closely that their arms brush. His face is carefully composed, calm in the dusk and torchlight. Firelight dances on his cuirass with its demons of the elder gods, its thunderbolts, and on his short sword where Enlil's bulls and lions and so many primal symbols play. This ritual is 1,000 years older than Thebes or its goddess. Stratton hopes the Thebans will understand. Tempest and Nico had chosen it, for the balance of the thing. And he and Critias and Sink had agreed. Stratton watched their commander, who in turn watched Stealth bring in the boys. Strat looked into Tempest's eyes, eyes that had seen so much worse than all would see tonight, and shivered in the gloaming. Everyone here knows that look, except the trainees. The stepsons all know that ageless face, relentless as the turning of the seasons. They know that proud mouth drawn tight, with black humor dancing at its corners. Nico brought the trainees up close, bidding them be silent and take their places. They knew now that something was coming. Chorus stared straight ahead. Artan craned his neck every which way. Shamshi strode on, the oldest, tallest, and strongest of the three, pacing Nico. Chorus and Artan, you stand behind Tempest and Crit. Shamshi, go to the middle of the circle, please, said Nico quietly. They did as they were told. Then Nico took his place, closing up the circle. Nowhere to run. And everyone about is staring at the circle of heavily armed fighters around an unarmed youth. The crickets seem too loud. Stratton searches the faces of the boys, who must have an inkling by now of what is coming. Artan waits behind Critias and Chorus behind Tempest without a word. Sham, his big shoulders squared, stands easily in the middle of the circle, facing Nico, attentive. Playing out the game, facing down the men surrounding him, or just uncomprehending. Then all the senior officers put away their swords, a ceremonial statement from antiquity meaning that all is in order and weapons not required. Sink takes his rope from his shoulder and shakes out a loop as if he were about to catch a colt. Now he knows, or guesses. Wild eyes darting, backing up, stopping because Crit is there behind him. One desperate pivot full around and Shamshi says, "What is this?"
"Your lesson, one you won't forget," replies the Riddler as Sink's loop whirls, then drops over Shamshi down his torso around his ankles and jerks him from his feet. The youth yells once, and then he's struggling silently in the dirt and grass. Now they rush him, this young rapist with his Bandaran skills, whom Nico says might be able to kill you with a touch. The boy protests, loudly cursing an incoherent stream. Tempest grabs both his wrists and holds, while Sink pulls the other way with his loop. And then Strat and Nico move in. Strat knows his part. He slaps the boy backhanded hard across the face and knees him in the groin to stun him momentarily. Together they flip Sham onto his belly. Strat gets a knee in the small of his back. The young fighter has great strength, more than anyone expects, but has less to say now with his mouth pressed in the dirt. Tempest holds Shamshi tight, one hand still imprisoning both wrists. It takes all five men to subdue him. Strat uses all possible care, but the boy still writhes and fights them, spitting curses. Nico has his hands on Sham's head and neck now, doing something Bandaran that makes the youth gasp for breath, gag and finally faint dead away. When Crit and Nico have tight holds on both of Sham's arms, Tempest lets go of his wrists. They must be careful with this perhaps unconscious wizard boy, since death touch may be in Sham's arsenal. Strat and Sink bind Sham's arms to his torso with the rope. Then all the men let go, staring around at the silent crowd. Giscaris and Artan are holding on to each other, still behind the circle, wondering if their turn is next. Tempest hefts the trussed, unconscious youth and heads off for the altar, where the deboned ox awaits. The others from the circle follow, except the other two trainees, Chorus and Artan, who are rooted to the spot until Nico says, "You're coming with us." And everyone else traipses after them in a ragged line up the hill to the storm god's altar and the butchered ox. Sham is still unconscious. They rip his clothes away, then wrap him in the meaty hide and sew it around him, over his face and head, his limbs, so his legs and arms can't move. Altogether, they heave the hairy package up and onto the storm god's altar. It groans, a muffled sound. Then Tempest faces the other boys and all the gathered sacred band. "This fighter dishonored us. Take this lesson to heart. The storm god will decide if he lives. We leave him here all night. No one touches him or tries to free him."
Behind him, the oxhide bundle on the altar begins to struggle. Muted screams come from within. Sink, unperturbed, gathers up Sham's torn chitin and loin guard and puts them under one arm.
If no beast eats him in the night, then we free him in the morning. The lesson's done. Punishment finished. He's cleansed by the storm god of any taint. If the god sends a bear or a wolf or a panther to tear him apart, then that is Enlil's verdict, and no one interferes. But if anyone cuts him loose tonight or tries to save him, we hunt down all of them and kill them.
Tempest strides down from the hilltop with Nico, Critias, and Sink around him, and they stalk through the crowd and away without another word. Down the slope, people were beginning to talk, a careful buzzing and uneasy chatter accompanied by nervous laughter. Artin's eyes were streaming tears. Sobs shook his shoulders. Giscarus had a flinty, distant look. His hands were strangling one another. Strat came down the slope last, and, as he passed the boys, he said,
"I hope you both understand. You cannot help him."
"But can we stay here?" said Giscarus sullenly. "Stay with him tonight?"
"If you want to share his fate tomorrow, if you chase away the beast, then what's the point? The storm god decides his fate, not boys."
He pushed the two of them before him, thinking that loyalty such as these two displayed was rare and precious. He'd seen it too infrequently in his life. Sham, if he lived, would be grateful for such friends. Nicodemus was disturbed now that the deed was done. He had been a slave and a bondservant when he was younger than Sham. He knew well the feeling of being helpless, his life in others' hands. Alone in his quarters, he sought and found his rest place. From there he went deep inside Shamshi's mind, although he hated to invade another's place of safety. But the young fighter had brought this on himself, so he went to see if something could be salvaged. Once there, where Nico would have gone to hide if such torture were happening to him, he found a much different place than he'd expected. This Shamshi was not intimidated, he was enraged. He'd known that Shamshi was not an adept of Maat, but the confused images and the darkness deep in this wizard's sun were full of calculated artifice and burning ambition. Instead of a placid meadow or a sunlit stream or mountain grove, here were images of Chironea, war and bloodbath embraced, exalted, magnified, and memorialized. Long spears thunking into flesh, men staggering backward, impaled, screaming. This youth had spent more time on Bandera than Nico ever had. When Nicodemus had been Artin's age, he already was a Sacred Band fighter, paired with a man 9 years older. Before that, he'd been a caravan guard, and before that a single mercenary making his way in the world, dependent on his skills alone to feed him. Sham had stayed on Bandera, learning but not doing, years longer. Perhaps he'd stayed too long. Too much beauty, too much encouragement, not enough hardship, not enough paid for so much received. A young life distorted, expectations out of balance. Of course, Sham was no devotee of Maat. This one wanted to rule, thought he was destined for greater things than mere mortals could aspire to. Nico walks on Sham's private battle plane like the battle plane at Chironea, but here endless ranks of combatants are killing one another amid a purple haze, and Nico cannot stay. Nico sees a gate, barred and battered. He'd lost a fight in a place like this once, where wounds would bleed and bones would crack on a man's body in the world, no matter how far away the fight was fought from flesh and blood. One man lies here with so many arrows in him he looks like a porcupine. One unattached head wears a wistful look, just staring. Kyrenia. It is not foolish to fear the darkness here. Nico backs away, out. Not cowardice, but self-preservation, out. And into a room within this youth's mind where a whore quivers while her soul leeches away. And leeches away. And away. Sham isn't here with her, but Nico understands Shamshi now, this wizard boy. It is not simple death touch that Sham is using. This is something twisted, perverted, and rare, not of Bandera, but harnessing Banderan's skills to power it. What he sees chills his heart, clenches icy claws around his soul, and squeezes. He leaves. He isn't going to fight a demon here, or any spawn of hell, or even a youth whose body is somewhere else wrapped in a bloody oxide. He backs out of there, wandering across blackened grass covered with char, until he finds his path, where dark footprints lie deep in mucky ground, and follows his own spirit's tracks out of there. Out of there. When he came to himself, Nico was in his barracks room again. He was shaking all over, trembling from head to foot. He spent some time regaining his equilibrium. Then he went to see his sable mare, who usually could cheer him. But not tonight. Not with that youth tied on the altar and wolves howling and jackals gibbering. So he went to see the Riddler. Strat and Crit and Sink were sitting there already, shadows in their eyes as deep as the moonlit night. What, Nico? Tempest knew him too well. I went seeking Sham in his rest place. It's not like mine. There's no rest there, just battle. I'm not sure what we've done will help. He's very angry. What we did might make things worse, if he lives.
If he lives or not, the Storm God will decide. We'll wait together until sunrise, then go see what Enlil has wrought.
Yes, leave it to the god. This is not a normal boy, not even a normal Bandaran adept. This is something darker, much, much darker. And stronger, stronger than he should be. Nico couldn't tell them this. With the Riddler he had chosen the ritual, fit for a black heart, but not for blacker arts. So he didn't say any more. They had plenty of time to wonder what they might find in the morning on Enlil's altar, and to ponder what the Thebans and the youngsters would think of stepson justice. They knew what the stepsons would think. This rite was an ancient remedy for a timeless crime. A while later they heard a ruckus outside the Riddler's door.
"I'll go," said Crit, signaling the others to come alert, wait and see.
Violence begets violence every time, so as Critias went to open the door, short sword drawn, Strat reached for a crossbow and knocked a bolt, covering him as he pulled the door open wide. The two remaining trainees stood there, the seer and the storm god's son, blinking in the lamplight spilling out the door from Tempest's room. Artan, with his teeth chattering, was pulling Chorus firmly by the mantle. "Stealth. We're looking for stealth. We... that is, can we... stealth? Can we come in so we're not tempted to do anything we shouldn't?" Chorus wrenched free.
"I'm all right. I won't go up there," I said.
Since Artan was the prescient one, Nico brought the boys inside, out of harm's way for the rest of the night. In the morning, Sham would be alive or dead. Whatever happened with Shamshi, the wizard boy, Nico knew they would soon have to deal with Karen, his Theban sacred band, and their goddess Harmony. Tempest, by the look of him, had had enough of encounters deferred and confrontations postponed. End of chapter 10.
Chapter 11 Waiting for the Gods. Sunrise is spilling lemon light on the hill behind the barracks when Tempest arrives on foot. His sacred band spreads out in his wake like a mantle in the wind. Everyone wants to know what's on the altar this morning. The hide-wrapped bundle is nowhere to be seen. No ropes lie near, cut or chewed. No meaty skin, no young fighter, no sign of rescue or struggle can be found. There is no scar of mud and trampled grass where a heavy burden has been carried off. On the hilltop, the bright sunrise reveals only his own footprints and those of his stepsons, and three boys' lighter prints from the night before. Tempest sees no trough or swath such as a body would have made being dragged away or savaged. No beast has left tracks in the mud. The altar of Enlil is pristine in the dawn. Free of blood or any other sign of what took place here, as if the gods are in the game today.
Enlil, where are you in this? On what side? For what result did you take him?
The god doesn't answer Tempest. Nico, Critias, and the two trainees come up to him where he pokes in the char from the pyre made here days ago. The boys chatter.
Stealth, you know we didn't do anything. We were with you all night.
Nico kicks at the char, looking at the scuff his sandal has made in the grass. Crit hunkers down across from Tempest.
Commander, shall we hunt? Bring Shamshi back by whatever means, alive or dead?
Sharp eyes, bared teeth.
Crit is a wolfhound on the hilltop, eager for the scent. Hunt.
No spore shows anywhere.
All see that.
Artan and Chorus, frightened to be blamed, stick close together, following Nico like a pair of cubs. The char left in the muddy grass shows clearly.
Nothing human stood at this altar last night but five stepsons with a burden. No animal came hungry and went away fed.
Hunt? Yes, Crit. By threes and fours, assign at least one veteran to each Theban pair. Hunt night and day, set up drops and stations in the city, be assiduous. Something spirited that youth away. Be prepared for anything. We may be hunted in our turn, but hunt we shall.
But if anyone cuts him loose tonight or tries to save him, we hunt down all of them and kill them.
Tempest had decreed. And so they will. Acknowledging his commander's orders, Crit takes the boys with their many backward looks down through the band coming the other way, up the hill. Nico hovers nearby, outwardly poised, watching everything with that mystic calm. Beneath it lies mayhem, begging to be loosed. Things are too numinous now for anyone's good. Tempest knows. His right-side partner wants a target to destroy, a way to make amends for his trainee gone wrong.
Stealth, what does your march show you?
Nico crouches down as if arrows are aloft and looks around, then up and then stares deep and hard at Tempest.
I'll find him for you, and I'll kill him if I can. There's a good chance no one else can. It's time.
If I can.
Tempest looks closer at this young fighter who has faced so much beside him, year after year, and never faltered, never flinched. Stealth called Nicodemus is the most talented man-at-arms Tempest has ever seen. A cold sweeps up the hill or out of Nico's flesh. Or out of Tempest's heart, still twinging as skin and bone and muscle knit.
Kyrenia, Nico?
Nico nods.
Chironea, the youth who wouldn't keep his place in the ranks. I still see that battle, Riddler, in my inner sight. In the light of day, worse, in his rest place.
Tempest knows that Chironean vision too well, but is startled to hear that Nico sees it too.
Long spears thunking into flesh, man staggering backward, impaled.
I see the same, Chironea. Hard to admit, harder to bear, haunted by one battle out of so many battles. Now perhaps there is a reason for this recurring specter of the Theban martyrs. A trainee of the band, spinning out of control with mental skills like Nico's and wizardry in his blood. And Nico, who would risk anything for Tempest, had ventured into Shamshi's rest place, where Tempest's right man would least like to go. Nico says nothing, just looks away down that hill where Thebans and sacred banders from a dozen other lands make their way up together. Some are coming close, harsh breathing, muttered conversation, hunched shoulders, harried looks. Tempest raises his hand and everyone stops like magic fielded, pausing where they are.
What stealth?
I will not lose this one, Enlil, or you and I will lose each other.
Valor was in Nicodemus, unquestionable, and commitment like trees to stand or night to fall. Again, he asked his right-side partner,
What?
Commander, Shamshi took Chironea and made it his rest place.
What kind of soul is that who wants to walk among corpses?
Sham has death touch and other disciplines, but never mastered Mott. He may be a good fighter, but he has an awful heart, and I helped make him what he is. This problem's mine to solve.
Don't blame yourself, Nico.
Some things are truly fated. Before you took Shamshi to Bandera when I visited Ascalon on Meridian, the Dream Lord held Sham there. Ash told me then that Shamshi was born to die young.
And a sprite named Jihan, a froth daughter of Tempest's long acquaintance, had languished in that nightmare realm with Sham, both in thrall to Ascalon, Lord of Dream and Shadow.
What we'll do now, Stealth, we'll do together. You're with me until I say otherwise.
The very mention of Ascalon made Nico turn his head away and shiver. The Lord of Meridian must still plague Nicodemus in his dreams. He stood up, and Nico did. And in his head, Tempest heard a rustle, then a deep breath and a low growl.
So, Enlil, our doings interest you at last. Is this to your taste, wildly moving destiny? Did you steal that skin-wrapped boy away? Save him? Unmake him? Better, take this young fighter Nico to your breast and hold him close. He is the hope of you and me and every one of us. Hold him fast.
Enlil says nothing, confesses nothing, promises nothing. Only breathes, a ringing and a sighing in his head. Tempest motions again to the crowd. Permission to approach, granted. Come up and see what the gods have wrought today. Up come the fighters then to take a look. To touch the char and grass, walk the hill and find a sign. But no one finds an omen or a portent or a trace of what has happened here.
Karen, called Tempest to the Theban leader, attend us.
Karen came out from among his milling men, his golden son close behind, Hair has grown out far enough on both their heads that you can see Karen's is black and the boy's is blonde. They dressed like stepsons now and moved among the troops with